Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We are going to have on with us today Hakeem Shaheed, Shaheed Omar, who is a longtime civil rights activist and founder of All Inmate Lives Matter, who will be with us to share with us the mission, goals, and objectives of his organization, the type of clients he has been advocating for, and obstacles he has faced along the way. Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light, was initiated to expose injustices in the communities, the prisons, the government, and beyond. People have and continue to suffer as a result of wrongful convictions, victims turned offenders, offenders and community members who were or are having their civil rights violated. We have serious problems in this country resulting in violence around racism, hate crimes, social conflicts involving the poor and middle class versus the wealthy and powerful. So without hesitation, we are going to welcome our guest, Shaheed Omar, again, a civil rights activist, longtime and founder of All Inmate Lives Matter, who will be sharing with us the mission, goals, and objectives of his organization. So, Shaheed, are you on with us?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. How are you?
I'm doing good today. How about you?
I'm doing good. I'd like to say assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Assalamu alaikum.
Shaheed, I was just letting the audience know a little bit about you, but do you want to share more about you, how you became a civil rights activist and eventually founding the All Inmate Lives Matter?
Yeah, sure do. Well, this is time back in 75. I walked out of the institution in 75 after the second time of being locked up. Walked back in the institution within the same month doing volunteer Islamic chaplaincy work. That was in 75. 77, I started in community action agency, doing a job, working with ex-offenders. 85, I got a master's degree in criminal justice. My son went to prison at 18 in 1989. In 2004, he was at an institution called Red Onion. And he called me one day and told me, he said, Pops, he said, I never seen nothing like this in my life. He said, I ain't never had no problem with white folks. He said, but these white folks up here are real different from the white folks that I know growing up. He said, these are some real hardcore, mean white folks. He said, I want you to introduce you to a guy. And he gave me the guy's name. And before we get out the program, I'm going to remember his name. But he had a website that he developed out of Pennsylvania. And the website had inmates' names, charges, and officers' names who had jumped on them and what he jumped on them for. All this is on the internet. We're talking about 2004. I got on the internet, pulled up these guys' names, and started writing them. These guys told me the same thing that my son told me. He said, man, he said, you never seen nothing like this prison here called Red Onion. It's a sister prison called Wadden's Ridge. Both of these were Supermax prisons. At the time, I had just begun to learn something about Supermax prisons, though I had worked in prisons before. I didn't hear the word Supermax. So, these guys told me the charges that they had, institutional charges, not street charges, but institutional charges, who jumped on them, when they jumped on them, and what they did to them. So I started writing U.S. Attorney General's office, the director of prisons in Virginia office, state legislators, everybody and anybody who had anything to do with prisons, I started writing them. send the guy, I sent the officers the letters that the inmates were sending me, not the officers, but people who were working in prisons, U.S. Attorney General Office, ACLU, everybody, anybody, reporters, everybody, anybody. So I sent them the letters that inmates were sending me, and we started working. So last year, a couple years ago, well, let's say a year and a half ago, when the government started sending us stimulus money, I decided to do a nonprofit. Now, I've worked for nonprofits all my life, but I resisted getting one of my own because a lot of paperwork involved with nonprofit, and I'm the kind of person, I don't do too much. I don't like doing a whole lot of paperwork. I like to be on the front line working with guys. But being in the office doing a whole lot of paperwork just wasn't my thing. But I kept hearing, if you want some power, get you a nonprofit yourself and do what you want to do yourself. So I did that. I got a nonprofit called All Inmates Lives Matter. And I started on the basis of the organization called All Black Lives Matter. I said, all inmates' lives matter. Don't make no difference what the color they are, whether they're Muslim, non-Muslim. If you're an inmate, your life matters to me. So I got a president, I got a treasurer, and I got a secretary. And we started rolling. You know, I get letters on a daily basis, on a regular basis, and I respond to those letters. Before we leave this program today, I want to read one of these letters I got from an inmate a couple of days ago. But that's my introduction.
Well, I feel honored to have you on, Shahid. I know you've been pretty busy, and I know recently too. I saw that you had some handcuffs put on you for advocating being an activist in a courtroom. You're not afraid of anything, right? We can go into that later, but I want you to read it. But
okay.
I want to find out first. We have a caller already. 540, do you want to say your name, please? 540? Probably just listening. Okay. Shahid, read the letter and we can go from there. Thank you.
All right. Well, let me read a little bit off my brochure. I got a brochure. It's a real nice brochure. It's real nice. It cost me a lot of money to get this brochure, and the man who did it for me, man, they took money. I mean, they took money. But it says, support our inmates. On the left-hand side, it's got a bar there in the bottom with a guy's hands on the bars. It says, All Inmates Lives Matter Incorporation is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation with a mission to change the living conditions of inmates that are being abused and assist their families as much as possible. This should be done by the following: reintegration and supportive service, which is really a word for reentry. You know, what we used to do, coming out of institutions, working with guys coming out of institutions, getting them ready to come out of institutions, was called reintegration and supportive service. And now they call it reentry. Resource and referrals and advocacy. Then in the middle part of the brochure, I got a black guy's picture with his eye black after being beat up. At the bottom, it says, somebody on? Leona?
The one?
Okay.
The caller, I asked if he wanted to state his name, but he was listening, so I'm going to put him on mute if he had nothing to say.
Okay, all right.
Okay. Okay.
Hello?
Okay.
Hello?
Hi, this is Fatibas. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam. Alhamdulillah.
Okay. So, Rahik, do you have anything to say, Rahia?
Fatiba, this is Leona. How are you? Brother Shahid, alhamdulillah, I just recently asked to Leona to put me in communication with your organization. I am a formerly wrongfully incarcerated sister, still challenging my wrongful conviction, trying to get help with that. But now I'm faced with my son, Sarajuddin Abdul Qadir, who is wrongfully incarcerated for 35 years in the state of Indiana, one of the most racist states, and a Ku Klux Klan affiliated. He is currently housed in Pendleton Correctional Facility in Pendleton, Indiana, for a crime that never happened and that he's definitely innocent of. Just guilty by association and not knowing that the individuals, one being Muslim, were under federal and state investigation from Georgia to the state of Indiana. My son's purpose was going out there to try to see if there were better opportunities of housing and employment as of, you know, compared to Georgia. Right now, Sabatra Dean has been, he's been set up in,
Can you do me a favor and just let, I'd like to have, first of all, I'd like to have Shahid let the audience know what the organization's about, and then we can go into your
story.
Oh,
no problem, no problem.
Because not too many people are aware of All Inmate Lives Matter, so I'd like to have Shahid.
No problem.
Okay, Shahid, I'm sorry, can you finish what you were saying, and
then
we can go back.
All right. In the middle part of my brochure, there's a black guy with his eye black after being beat up, and down the bottom of abundance up. Down the bottom of the brochure, it says nurses are not providing medical assistance for inmates after inmates are physically attacked by COs. Okay, on the right-hand side, inside the brochure, up at the top, it says correctional officers are abusing inmates by, one, unnecessary cell extractions and destruction of inmate property. It means going into a cell and bringing an inmate out who don't necessarily want to come out. So they shoot the gas on the inmate, and they go in, about five or six of them go in, and they beat the inmate up and bring him out to cell, called cell extraction. And then destruction of inmate's property, because while they're in there, they try to sell up. They destroy all the property they can. Books, papers, newspapers, clothes, whatever they can put their hands on, they tear it up. Two, physically attacking inmates while dressed in military gear. When they go inside of a cell, they dress down like they're in the military. So they got everything on that you, a military man, got on. Three, not allowing inmates to file grievances. Most penitentiaries got a grievance process. In order to get in federal court, you got to go through the grievance process, and it's probably three steps you got to go through. So there's a grievance process. Four, sexual abuse while conducting so-called body searches. That means going up inside of an inmate's behind, looking for a knife or something. And while they're going up in your butt, they putting their fingers in your butt, and they abusing you. Simple as that. Five, not giving them their meals. Once you got a problem with some officers in the penitentiary, you ain't gonna get fed. You're just not gonna get fed. Six, not giving them showers, shower time, but false paperwork indicate they did. You're not getting no shower, but the paperwork gonna say you got a shower. Seven, not giving them recreation time, but false paperwork indicating they did. Self-explanatory, no recreation time. Eight, 5-point restraints. And then putting you on a bed and putting your arms and legs out and tying you down to a bed. That's what that is, 5-point restraint. Nine, unnecessary canine attacks. Sometimes they put their dogs on you. And even though you have been apprehended from running or giving up from fighting the canine, the dog's still going to attack you. Ten, solitary confinement, called administrative segregation. I mean, locking down in a cell 24 hours a day and nobody else around but you, and you in the cell all day long by yourself. 11, hiring gang members to attack inmates filing grievances. Inside this building called Red Onion, there are some gang members called themselves the Bloods and the Crips, especially the Bloods. Officers will hire a blood to attack an inmate who filed a grievance against the officer. And this is black inmates filing a grievance against the officer and being attacked by a black gang member for filing a grievance. You call these inmates snitches. So if you file a grievance against an officer, you're considered to be a snitch. Laughing, found it laughing at mentally ill inmates, behavior and suicide attempts. There are a lot of inmates in the penitentiary across the country that are mentally ill. And also spend a lot of time laughing and making fun of inmates exhibiting mental health behaviors. For an example, inmate might pick up that might urinate in a cup, throw it all over his body, or defecate and smear the defecation on his body. Or take the defecation, put it in the bag, and throw it on the officer. Officers laugh at that kind of behavior. Advocacy. Subject matter. Our advocacy services revolve around various prison issues which our clients want resolved in a specific manner. Regardless of what the prison problem might be, our inmate advocates take a standardized approach. We start by speaking with the client and their family members to understand the issue, what led to the issue, or what resolutions clients would prefer. During this phase, we also obtain any necessary background documents to round out our understanding of the issue for our use of advocacy. Okay, on the backside of the inmate, the subject called projects, reintegration supportive services. We offer individual and group counseling sessions for those reintegrating into a free society after incarceration. Counseling sessions are facilitated by a qualified professional with a master's degree in criminal justice, that's me, and or professional peer support providers, that's my people work for me, president, secretary, treasurer. Counseling sessions are held on site and at other available reentry program locations. Participants attend one individual and one group session per week, or when necessitated by circumstances, and sessions are held no longer than 1 hour, or when time is necessitated by circumstances. They are focused on developing healthy family relationships, decreasing the likeness of returning to prison while adjusting to free society. Additional referrals to mental health services are made if needed. Our services are offered free or otherwise dictated by policy related to funding. Reintegration supported services. As a resource and referral hub, All Inmates Lives Matter provide information on other established organizations that can assist those reintegrating into free society after incarceration. I had an inmate call me last night about 2 o'clock in the morning. He's in another town in Virginia. He wanted to know how he could get to this town and where he could stay at. And I first then asked him, man, what are you doing calling me at 2 o'clock in the morning? Mm-hmm. All day long, you've been out there doing whatever you do, and you wait till 2 o'clock in the morning to call me. What's wrong with you? So he told me, yeah, he's been busy and he ain't doing nothing. So 2 o'clock in the morning, he called me. I said, yeah, come hang up and call me in the morning. He did. He called me this morning. I told him about the program in Roanoke where he could live at. And he told him, called the probation officer, asked him about a Dorcas house. Dorcas house is a program in Roanoke where they give you a place to live. Transportation and basic human needs such as food, clothing, anti-criminal influences. In addition, we provide referrals for those who have experienced domestic violence, substance abuse, drug dealing, sex and gambling addictions. We strongly focus on social skills related to job readiness and employment retention. That's it. That's the brochure, man. It's a real nice brochure. It's colored red, blue, and white. It's beautiful. Real nice. Cost me a little money to get it done, but I hate to have it.
I think it's awesome. What you're doing, I really do. You know, you were mentioning medical health care, mental and medical. I just wanted to bring up one thing that was recently put on Facebook. This was yesterday, about a young man. His name is Corey Griffin, and this brother died. He died yesterday at Elmore Correctional Facility because they refused to give him medical attention. And so, and he was 45 years old. But these are some of the things that are happening now with the lack of medical treatment. And you mentioned that. And I wanted to also real quickly say that the people that they contract with, medical providers, there are some that are not even licensed to practice in certain areas. And there are people mm-hmm. that are performing surgery, which they shouldn't be doing. So these are some issues mm-hmm. that I'm glad you brought it up because it's something that should be addressed. It really is.
Yeah, medical. Let me tell you a little bit more about that. Because medical issues, after they beat you up, you got a medical problem. Or some inmates come in the institution with medical problems. And if you're nice, real nice, you might get some help with a medical problem. Mm-hmm. If you have a problem talking to officers after they beat you up, you ain't getting no medical help. Because the nurses, some of the nurses are going with officers. And so when an inmate get beat up by an officer, he ain't getting no medical attention. He just not getting no medical help. And so that's a real big problem because you can have a black eye, a busted jaw. You're going to have something where you're going to need some pain medicine. And the basic pain medicine you're going to get are the ones you can get off the shelf in a drugstore or in any kind of store. You're not getting anything else. It's simple as that. And a lot of inmates can file suits and get to the court dealing with the medical issues. And if you can get to court real easy with a medical problem if you know how to do the work. So that's a real problem in institutions, a medical problem, real problem. Now, I have a couple medals.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that too. You mentioned that.
Yeah, I got a couple letters I'd like to read. And this will give the audience some idea of what we're talking about. The letter was sent to me by an inmate who I've been talking to for some time. He developed cards, greeting cards, and he tries to sell them to other inmates or to the public. But he's been abused. He's at an institution called River North. And River North is a new institution. As far as abuse is concerned, the only students I've really been dealing with have been dealing with since 2004. I just heard about inmates in River North in the last couple of years, and they are really, really, really hurting inmates physically. This brother says it's Sunday evening, September the 18th, 2022. Dear Brother Shaheed, I hope you get this letter. So much dirt is being thrown at us blacks up here. Like yesterday, a black inmate beside me in the hole, RHU, River North hole. This black brother been on a hunger strike for 8 days. So yesterday they wanted to strip his cell of everything. Now I tell inmates, don't go on a hunger strike. Because unless the public know you're on a hunger strike, you really don't do no good. You just won't get fed. If the public don't know about it, they can't protest. When you go on hunger strike, if you can't get information to the public and the public can't protest, you just won't be hungry. Simple as that. So this guy been on hunger strike for 8 days. So yesterday they wanted to strip his cell of everything, clothes and all, and give him just his smock to put on. A smock is a blanket, but real short, just to cover his private parts. So he refused to give his clothes up. So they sprayed him down with big cans of spray. It's just like a fire hazard. A fireman wear on his back when going to a fire. And this sergeant named Cole, C-O-E, used a lot on that black inmate. It was real strong. I could smell it in my cell through my vent. And all the inmates was kicking the door, didn't like what they saw happen. He went on hunger strike to get his cell meal. Right now, he's in a cell across from me. I was sprayed September 7th, 2022, by this white female officer named S. Sneed. What happened was I got mad because they locked me up in the hole on 9-6-22. And didn't tell me why, nothing. So I had a razor blade, a dull one, and I wanted to see someone tell me what's going on. But this white female got smart out the mouth and wouldn't get no one for me. So he was asking for a high up officer to come and see him. So I sneak my, I cut my wrist. I slit my wrist a little, just enough to draw some blood. So she hurried up and called the other floor officer. And when he came, she then told me to cut myself, and I did not much. But she then sprayed me with her mace. But when the captain came, and I told him that she told me to cut myself, but she and the other white officer denied it. Then when they got me out the cell, put me in the shower where I had cut myself on the left wrist, this white redneck officer and Sneed took her fingernail and dragged real hard in the wound. I cut myself at 3 times. I guess she wanted me to holler out in pain. But I didn't give her the satisfaction to see me in pain. I just gritted my teeth together and took the pain. Oh, yeah, I cursed her white ass out after I had the legs ironed and handcuffs off. I have also written some of the everyday someone I knew in Richmond, Director Harold Clark. Harold Clark is the director of the prison system in Virginia. He's worked in several facilities. As a matter of fact, he worked where you live out there in Massachusetts, Leona. Now, he's a real sharp, tall, Jamaican-born African-American. Talks with an accent. So most females that he encounters, they are attracted to his accent, Jamaican accent. He's real smart. When he came to Virginia, he was talking to the governor about saving the governor money by running an excellent reentry program. So when you're talking to the governor about saving money, talking to state legislators about saving money, you get their attention. And so in Virginia, we second in inmates returning. The parole board ain't letting nobody out. If you ain't letting nobody out, how can they return? Simple as that. But he slick. He can talk that talk. And he gets awards all over the country from different people. And he's tall. Real slick guy, and I'm trying to get rid of him. Simple as that. Okay, Director Harold Clark. Deputy Director Joseph Watts, Chief of Operations, David Robinson, in Internal Affairs, and Investigator Unit in Richmond. But no one has come to investigate all of my complaints. I don't understand. Also, I was put in a strip cell, and the floor had lots of white folks' hair on it. The sink was dirty and toilet feces was on the wall. And I couldn't have no scraps washcloth, nothing for 6 days. Every time I ate, I was sick at the stomach. And I didn't use the toilet for a number two for 7 days. I wasn't about to sit on that nasty toilet stool, no way. The white inmate they have cleaning up don't clean these cells properly at all. But he'll clean their areas where the officers be at. This inmate have 4 jobs. We only supposed to have 1. By the guidelines, IOP, no inmate supposed to have numerous of jobs. That stops other inmates from getting to work. That's page 1. Page 2. Did somebody call?
No.
Okay. And the psychiatrist, Dr. Hayes, she's good for putting us in these nasty and cells with nothing to clean over, wash our hands. Also, we're supposed to have some kind of spoon to eat with, not our hands and fingers, but she won't give us nothing to eat with or clean our hands with before we eat. This goes on for 7 more days. Meat and gravy, eat with your fingers. Everywhere else, they have a rubber spoon for us to eat with, except River North. You don't have nothing to eat with if you eat with your hands. I'm filing paperwork on all these tonight. I'm going to file a cruel and unusual punishment claim in court after I go through with the complaint and grievance procedures. Enough of this. Now, the rest of you is talking about another brother named Barry Austin. I want you to listen to this right here. This is really something. This letter goes to Internal Affairs, August 23rd. Right, let you know about a River North Correctional Officer's brutality on inmates by the guards. And the warden, David Anderson, knew about these attacks. This warden, David Anderson, come from Red Onion, Waters Ridge. He was the warden that started the program where he would pay a gang member to attack an inmate that filed grievances against him. David Anderson, that's his name. You know about these attacks and still don't do nothing about them. Some of these inmates think that if you write an officer higher than the one that's abusing you, that they'll do something about the abuse. It's not like that. All these officers are together with one mind and one spirit, and they come at you all the same way. As long as none of this staff or others get hurt, since I've been here at River North, which was since September 9th, 2021, I've been brutally attacked twice myself. Once November 13th, 2021, then again by two white officers, April 1st, 2022. And those two officers then turned around and wrote me an assault, an attempted assault charge, along with a threatened and bodily harm charge. After they beat you up, they write you up for attacking them. That way, you don't get the chance to write them up. Well, when you write them up, it seems like it's not true because they write it, you a charge for beating them up. I was found guilty of them anyway when I hadn't did nothing of any kind. Since I've been here, I've also been about three more black inmates. I've seen about three more black inmates being beaten down by the white officers up here. After they handcuffed from behind, seven or eight white officers then beat you down very hard, very bad. Have written it up on many occasions, but still no one comes to investigate or talk to us about the assaults, violations of our rights, racial slurs from these white male officers. No, up here, not all of them, but the most of them. On June 24, 2022, an inmate named Lamont Drayton, number 1145204, was in River North Unit, was beaten down very bad by about eight white officers, along with a lieutenant. And when they finished beating him down in the cell, they dragged him out of the cell, face all bloodied up, put him in a shallow, and then refused to let the nurse clean him up of all the blood to make matters worse. The next 2 days, he was refused all his meals, had him in a strip cell with nothing, no soap, no washcloth, towel, nothing. Then they came, and in comes the psychologist, told her that the inmate said he was going to hurt himself just to try and justify of having the inmate on strip cell. When they put you on strip cell, that means you're in a cell naked. Ain't nothing in the cell but you, and maybe some draws, but you ain't nothing in the cell but you. Called a strip cell. And they do this after they say that you want to try to hurt yourself after you've been beat up. No soap, no washcloth, towel, nothing. So he can't use a phone or write his family. Inmate wasn't suicidal, saying anything about hurting himself. They lied on the inmate. Kept him on strip cell for about two whole long weeks with shower, soap, with no shower, no clothes, everything. They would give it to him a little bit at a time. Let me see this right here. I've been incarcerated for 40 years, flat. And I had never seen an officer jump inmate 7 or 8 deep while he's in handcuffs from behind. Here's in the institution where an inmate is handcuffed from behind, and 8 or 9 officers jump on him and beat him up. He handcuffed from behind, and they jump on him and beat him up. This guy's been locked up 40 years. He never seen anything like this in his life. And then later on, they get together and brag about it. If you're on general population, the officer don't like you or want you out of this building, this is what they do. They would call the psychologist, tell her that he made it threatened to harm himself. And she would tell him to lock him up in segregation. Camera, shift cell. He won't call him over or come to see him. She'll wait after he's locked up in strip cell before he even come up to the inmate. So this is a long love. All he talks about is how the inmates get beat up. It's unbelievable to make you cry. I mean, it really, really will make you cry to think that. And I have read letters like this right here, and I have challenged. Well, my son, like, he's home now. Well, my son was locked up in, you know, he wasn't in the River North. He was in Red Onion. My son called home to tell me about inmates being beat up. I'd write the officers and tell them, I said, double dare you put your hands on my son. The whole 18 years that he was locked up, he never once told me he was beat up. I have no reason to believe he was beat up. And if he was, he wasn't going to tell me anyway because he knows I had a plan. And my plan was retaliation. And I had worked it out with some more brothers on the street. We was going to that town and introduce ourselves to some officers eating on Sunday morning somewhere. And we were going to do the same thing to them that was done to the enemy. Some of us that, you know, so I kept my son from being beat up.
Was that, that must have been at Red Onion, because I remember years and years ago when we did national work, even then, Red Onion had a bad reputation for the abuses that were going on there.
Yeah, that's Red Onion. Red Onion and Wallace Reed. Wallace Reed is a sister to Red Onion. And since it's been built, one was built in 89. I'm sorry. 98 and 99, and both of them was built to house what they call the worst of the worst. They made the public think that inmates in Virginia called the worst of the worst was being sent to Red Onion in Wallace Reed. What they found, there was not enough inmates in Virginia to fit that category of being the worst of the worst. So they changed the status of Wallace Ridge from a supermax prison to a record prison. But they're still doing the same thing. These prisons up in the mountains in Southwest Virginia. And they're way away from anybody living in the city. And officers work in both of these institutions. They're kin to each other. And they have been charged. They have been in court. And the problem with going to court, after you get to court, they take a settlement. If you take a settlement, after you got the officer in court, you take a settlement for $2,000 or $3,000. What part of the settlement is that you can't talk about the case. So you can't talk about the case. And the public never really know what's going on. The reason why we know about police brutality is because we see it on video. If you didn't see it, you wouldn't know anything about it. And that's what happens in prisons. You don't see the video because you took a settlement. The inmate took a settlement. You take a settlement, and $2,000 or $3,000 sounds good to a broke inmate. Sounds real good. And after the settlement, they send you right back to the same institution, living around the same officers, and doing the same thing. They just don't do it to you anymore. But they still doing it to the other inmates. And so the inmate takes a settlement for $2,000. He can't talk about the case. He can't talk to his mom about the case. He can't talk to nobody about the case. He can't talk to nobody about the case. But he got a couple thousand dollars. And that's all he's looking for. I have encouraged inmates not to take a settlement. Forget about the money and tell the public what happened. Tell the new people, come on in this trial. Come on in the courthouse where they have this trial at. And expose the officers for what they're doing. So the public will know what's going on. If you take a settlement, the public will never know. So when you're telling your mama, your sister, your brother, about officers jumped on you, you can't talk to them. You can't tell them the details, nothing. Except because you took a settlement. So the public don't know. So I have a hard time convincing people in the public because they look at me like, man, look at you. We ain't never heard nothing like that. And I'm telling them that the inmate took a settlement. And they say, well, if he would be that bad, he wouldn't take no settlement. And they're right. If he would beat that bad, he want the public to know. And they are beat that bad. But they take the $2,000 or $3,000 and go about their business. Some of it is a bad thing, terrible thing. have another program in Virginia. I want to tell you the audience about. This program is called Interstate Compact Transfer Program. This is where an inmate, after getting beat up by officers, he is transferred to another state. We have inmates in Colorado, Virginia inmates, sent all the way to Colorado to hide you from being able to use the court system to protest what happened to you. And if you're in Virginia, you can fight your case pretty good. But if you're in Colorado trying to fight your case in Virginia, man, look here. That's virtually impossible to do. It's virtually impossible to do. A few inmates can do it. Most inmates can't do it because they need legal assistance. So you're in Virginia, you're a Virginia inmate, but you're in Colorado. You can't get no officers. You can't get no lawyer who's even practicing pro bono, which means they don't want no money. They're going to fight your case without money. But he can't get to Colorado. He's not going to take his own money and come to Colorado to see you. So they know this. And they will transfer an inmate to Indiana, Washington, North Carolina, any and all other states. It's called Inmate Compact Transfer Program. Probably got one in your town too, wherever you at. We got one in Virginia. And we got inmates all over the country because of this program. And I can't find a lawyer that will attack this system. Most lawyers that say they practice pro bono or say they will practice pro bono case, they take a case that's easy to win. But if they got to doing the sweating, in the investigation, spending the money, real money, traveling to an institution to see you, they just ain't doing that. It's simple as that. They just ain't doing that. If they can fight the case by writing you, and you writing them and talking to you on the telephone, they'll deal with it. But if they got to come up off the money, do some traveling, get them an airplane, go somewhere, they ain't doing it. But they say they're doing pro bono work. So that's a bad situation.
Do you think that lawyers are feeling challenged by the prison union, the guards union nationwide? Because it seems as though a lot of people, even some legislative members, seem to be fearful of going up against the DOC for any reason. And I'm wondering if it has anything to do with their union.
It could very well be. There's all kinds of things that could be in the front of an officer working on a pro bono case or working with inmates. And fear could be one of them. Because when you walk in an institution like Red Onion, you walk in the institution, you walking up to men, officers standing 6 feet something, weighing 250, looking at you like they will kill you. You got to come out of that institution in the dark, get in your car, and drive back home. There could be a lot of fear involved. There could be a lot of fear involved in the union, what you're talking about now. There could be a lot of fear involved. You know, I don't think it's so much fear as it is a lawyer really taking a case on not spending on his own money and fighting for you. I just don't find them lawyers out here. There is one organization in Washington, D.C. It's called Right Behind Bars. And they're supposed to be one of the better organizations to fight for inmates. You've had some experience with them yourself, but it didn't come out good.
No.
And so I've had to find out from my own experience that they not doing everything they're supposed to do to help inmates. They are called Right Behind Bars, and the people that run the organization are attorneys. The whole staff is a staff of attorneys. You know, so It's just hard to find a lawyer in the street that would help you with your case. And in some cases where you got lawyers who you pay, you know from self-experience, and other people know that them lawyers take your money, especially in parole cases, the cases where a lawyer would tell you that he can help you make parole and charge your family $5,000 or $10,000 when they really can't help you make parole. The legal system cannot help you make parole. Simple as that. You better come off. You be better coming off paying a preacher in the community or somebody in the community like myself. You better off paying me. Deal with parole, because most lawyers don't know anything about parole. Most people in the community don't know nothing about parole. So you have to get somebody who knows from experience about parole and how you make parole. You know from experience. You want to spend some money on them, but don't pay no lawyer, because the only thing he's going to write is something legal. And the parole board is not up under his authority. They don't run the parole system. Parole system is independent of the legal system. As simple as that. So I'm available for questions.
Okay. Real quickly, Shahid, we have about 14 minutes, but I wanted to, before starts talking, I was wondering if you could let the audience know how they can get in contact with you, if they want to do any volunteer work or if they want to help out in any way.
Yeah.
If you can let the audience know how they can contact you.
My name is Shahid Omar, and it's spelled S-H-A-H-E-E-D. Last name is O-M-A-R. My address is 1430 Chapman with a C. C-H-A-P-M-A-N, Avenue Southwest, Apartment B, or Suite B, like in baby. That's Roanoke, R-O-A-N-O-K-E, Virginia, 24016. My telephone number is 540-309-2473. And I take all collect calls from prisons. Call me any time of day, any time of night. My email address is Shahid, S-H-A-H-E-E-D, Omar, 6969, @yahoo.com. So you can write me, email me.
You also have a Facebook about All Inmate Lives Matter?
Yes. All Inmate Lives Matter. My tax number is 85-276-2840. Send me the donation, you get your money back. The tax when you file taxes. Again, 85-276-2840. Number legitimately IRS tax. Non-profit agency. Something that I deny myself the opportunity to develop, but finally decided I need to have one. And it makes a difference when you speak. You speak as an individual versus speaking as an organization. When you speak as an organization, you have a little bit more power than you have as an individual. And I did some work for a long time as an individual. And I've had people tell me they ain't got to listen to me. So with the organization, they got to listen to you because you're legitimate. So they got to listen to you. And so I write letters for inmates. They listen to me. And they knew what I got. And officers hate for you to write a letter and it goes in your personnel file about you abusing an inmate. It goes in your personnel file. So if you need a job working in another institution because you got fired from that institution, it ain't that easy getting another job in an institution, because some institutions don't want no violence. Not all institutions want violence. Institute, we got 36 facilities in Virginia. And out of those 36, I think you can get about five institutions where they will beat you up. The rest of the institution, they won't put their hands on you unless you put your hands on somebody. You put your hands on somebody, Everybody put their hands on you. Especially institutions run by black folks. A lot of institutions run by black folks. Majority of black folks. And most of the time, they won't put their hands on you unless you put your hands on them. You put your hands on one, you know how you put your hands on a brother. You got three brothers discharged, four brothers discharged in, what state was that? Some news, discharged in one state where inmate, mentally ill inmate threw a cup of urine on them. And they killed him. They beat him up. They killed him. Now they're going to do some time.
How about the one in Florida? The man was mentally ill.
That might be what I'm talking about.
Did they scald him to death
in the shower? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they threw some music on the officers. They beat him up. They killed him. I mean, they literally killed him. He's a white guy.
No, this one was a black man.
You found a lot of mentally ill inmates in institutions. If you work in an institution, or you want to work in an institution and you can't deal with mentally ill people, you don't need to work there. You don't need to work there because some inmates are mentally ill and they will do things to you to blow your mind. They take a cup of doo-doo, defecation, in a cup and throw it right in your face. So if you can't handle that, you ain't got no business working in an institution. The best thing you can do is go take a shower, clean yourself up, and go on back to work. If you put your hands on them, you're going to be right there beside it. You're going to be right there beside them. They're going to need some time. You put your hands on a mentally ill person, period, locked up or free, you're going to need some time. All inmate lives matter. All inmate lives matter.
And everyone can find you as well, Shahid, on the internet just by typing in Shahid Omar, All Inmate Lives Matter, and it will pull everything up. And it also mentions that you started becoming an activist back in 1975, so you have been around for a long time.
Well, ain't no doubt about it. I walked out the institution in 75 after being locked up about 9, 10, 11 months. And walk back in the institution the same month doing volunteer Islamic chapter work.
I wish the audience could hear more from you. I hope you'll come back on the show too, because we still have 7 minutes, but I wish you would come back on the show as well, because we need to get these type of situations out. As I listen to you with these situations, I think about all these people around the country who are, the loved ones are being abused, they're being deprived, they're being violated, and mentally ill, addictions, everything, and they're getting long sentences to give them no hope whatsoever, and then to be abused as they are inside. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I would like to come out home and try to appeal to some of the rap artists. I know these people out here like LeBron James, the brothers that play that ball that I love to see. I know some of them people got kin folks in the institution. And they would be surprised how long the donation would go, making donations to brothers like me. For like right now, I mean, I'm struggling because I have to either work for somebody or work for inmates. And when I work for inmates, I don't get paid. You know, so I have to find a job working part time. But if I do this full time, man, I don't get paid. You know, I have electric bills, I have telephone bills, my computers. It takes stamps. It takes stamps to write brothers. I'm lucky because I have a Muslim brother named Fahim. Fahim buys me stamps, 100 stamps. Anytime I need him to, I can get 100 stamps on him. He's been doing this for a couple of years. Takes paper, print paper. It takes ink to put in a computer.
Do you have a donation button on your website, or do you have a Cash App account or anything like that where people can donate?
I got a Cash App and I got a donation too. You can just donate to the organization. Just my organization on the internet. And so you go right on there and make a donation.
Do you have the donation button or whatever would be needed so that they can make a donation?
Right, it's right there on the internet. It's right there. All Inmate Lives Matters right there. And you got the number that you use with your donation, so you get the money back at the end of the year by tax. And it's right there. It's right there. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. And I've got a few donations, but people don't really put no money in stuff like that. $2 or $3. It's hard to get stamps. I got a couple of brothers that know me. People know me personally. They know what I'm doing. And because they have kid folks that might be locked up, most people you find is working in prison, like myself, they work because they have somebody, some kin to them doing time. So they know what it's like. If you ain't never done no time before, it's hard to know what it's like. But if you've done some time, you know what it's like. And so mm-hmm. you know what it's like to be in the institution. It's simple as that. And go ahead.
I don't know if they still do it, but I know years ago, and I never took advantage of it. I was approved as a nonprofit with the U.S. Postal Service and also with FedEx. We were approved for nonprofit postage, which was 11 cents a stamp, and nonprofit FedEx. But I never took advantage of it. I just didn't have the time to figure it all out or whatever, and we were doing national. But that might be something you might want to check into as well, is to get approved for the nonprofit postage.
Follow it up with a text. Text me about that, because I never knew anything about that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know nothing about that. Yeah, text me about that.
Also, with those that are coming out that you say you help, also, if you could type up a generic letter so that when they come out, they can take that letter to a retail store or even a thrift shop to try to get some free clothing to be presentable when they go job hunting. Those are some of
I write up one and put it on the internet and they can use when they come out. When they come out of prison, yeah. a generic letter where they can use to go to stores. And we got a couple organizations in Roanoke where I live in that really take care of inmates when they come out. If they're on probation, you got to be on probation. If you're on probation, you can get some help. I was working for the organization one time, and the Department of Corrections in Virginia had to do a test to pass the test, and they wouldn't it was background check. They wouldn't certify me to work with inmates, work with ex-offenders, because they look at me as being enemy of the Department of Corrections. Because I stand up for inmates that are being beat. Oh, they look at me as being an enemy. So they wouldn't even authorize me to work with the organization. And I was working with them making pretty good money. And but it's a struggle, you know, but I'm doing what I gotta do and God takes care of me. But you can always use some help. Always use some help.
Exactly. You know, I think the DOC, I think they have prison officials and probably COs too. They feel threatened by someone they know can do some positive work with these inmates. You know, there's so much good in a lot of these people that are incarcerated. People don't see it. They see it like, but all the funding that the DOC gets, they're always looking for volunteers to go into the prisons and do exactly what they're getting the funding for. So the taxpayers' dollars are going into the DOC, but they're not. The DOC is not using those taxpayer dollars to bring in people, to professionals to actually do the work. They look for volunteers. You've done a lot of good work, Shahid. And I just thank you so much for coming on, and I'd love to have you come back on again to give us updates as time goes on as well.
Okay, I will. Just hit me up. Let me know when you want to come back on.
I will. And audience, I want to, once again, I want to recommend that you do provide some funding, some kind of contributions to All Inmate Lives Matter, because this, I can see, this is an advocate that really does what he says, and everything that is on his website is for truth. And we have so many people in society right now that are advocates, that are lawyers, that have all these things there stating that they do all these things, which they don't, yet they get funding. So I'm telling you, this is a good resource to help so that these inmates, these incarcerated individuals, men and women, can get the help they need. Shahid, thank you so much for coming on. And again, we'll have you back.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
So, audience, we are now going to end this episode. Thank you for listening in, and we hope that you will be with us the next time we have Shahid Omar, All Inmate Lives Matter, on with us. And I thank you for joining in. We are now going to close. Thank you.